The Fed's out of options. Rate cuts, money printing, balance sheet reversals. They call it policy, but it's really panic. This is in-game economics, where hope replaces discipline and the illusion of control finally breaks. They're not cutting rates because things are strong. They're cutting because the system is cracking. Inflation's eating savings. The labor market's stalling. Confidence in the dollar is fading fast. For decades, the Fed built a house of paper. Now they're striking the match that could burn it all down, leaving you to pay the price. When's the last time you actually held the wealth you've spent your life working for? My friends at Noble Gold Investments have been helping Americans move from paper wealth into real tangible assets. Numbers on a screen can disappear, but physical gold and silver, they've outlasted every crisis in history. Visit NobleGoldInvestments.com and get your free wealth protection kit today. That's NobleGoldInvestments.com for your free wealth protection kit. Discover how simple it is to protect your future.
Past performance may not be indicative of future results. Investing in precious metals, including gold, involves risks. Consult with your tax attorney or financial professional before making an investment decision.
Welcome into another edition of the Future Stocks Roundup. My name is Elijah Evans, joined by my co-host Dylan Barnes. Welcome to 2026, folks. We are here, the new year, the year of more growth for the White Sox, I think. I was going to say the year of the White Sox, and I realized probably not quite that yet.
Too early.
A little ahead of myself. But with that said, this is a really exciting time. We're kind of gearing up for the season. We are about a month and a half, not even, only just a little over a month away from spring training kicking off. Crazy. Pitchers and catchers report in about 5 weeks from now. We're going to start seeing, you know, White Sox guys getting, building up their pitching routines, guys getting in the cages. Going to be a really exciting time. I'm hoping, not sure about the dates yet, but I'm hoping to be out in Arizona at some point. Then in March, we've got World Baseball Classic, which is going to be a whole nother baseball spectacle. And then once that wraps up, it's going to be full go for White Sox baseball in 2026. So we're really pumped. This is going to be a super fun episode. But first, before we dive into it, Dylan, how's the holidays? How are things?
It was good. We both had some travel conflicts between the both of us. Both of us were going all over the place. So this is actually my first time on the Roundup since the White Sox signed Munetaka Murakami. I was going back through the episodes, and I was like, wow, I haven't really given my thoughts on the signing. It gets two Dylan thumbs up. I love that signing. It's the exact type of low-risk, high-reward signing that the White Sox should be doing right now. But yeah, I'm super pumped for this episode. We have 16 hot takes. We each have eight. So we brought four major league and four minor league hot takes. And this is probably one of my favorite episodes that we do every year, just because if you get it right, you sound like an absolute genius. But if you get it wrong, that's why they're called hot takes. So it's fun.
Yeah, we're going to have some fun with this for sure. Calling it bold predictions, I would say some of mine are lukewarm, to be honest. I think some of mine are a little more straightforward. Some are definitely more bold, I would say. So there's a wide range here. I tried to keep it more of just a variety of players that I have my eye on that I think can kind of take a step forward or really impress this season. A couple that are kind of team-wide or a little more, you know, standard. I think we both have a good variety there. So we're going to start on the major league side. Then we'll get into the minor league side. But we'll go one me, one Dylan, kind of back and forth. Try to incorporate some of the chat. We appreciate everybody who's tuning in here. We'll go major league first. Then we'll flip over to the minor league side, dive into more of the farm system stuff. I think in a couple weeks from now, I may even want to do like a more niche, like super lower levels version of this, where we really just look at like the breakout candidates, particularly at the lower levels. I was talking to Dylan about that earlier, just diving into that. But I think for now, we're just doing kind of the overview of our bold takes. So I'm going to let you kick it off here, Dylan, with the first take of the major league level. What is your first of your bold takes, bold predictions?
So what I did is I went in increasing levels of hotness. So this first one, mm-hmm. while it might still be bold, the third and fourth ones are going to be even more bold. So for my first one, I said Shane Smith gets Cy Young votes. I'm not going to go out there and speculate that he wins the award or that he is a Cy Young finalist, but I do think that if he improves on the season he had last year, and it being only his first year starting and throwing above 90 innings, and he just finished probably one of the best Rule 5 seasons, or first season in the new organization for a Rule 5 pick, 146 innings of a 3.81 ERA. If he can just take that next step forward, I think he could get a down ballot Cy Young vote or two. I think that he could finish like 10th in Cy Young odds.
Yeah, I don't hate it. I think it's very possible. I think that there people forget based on the mid-season bump just how impressive Shane Smith was in spurts, right? In shorter amounts of time, he was incredible, and that was his first season as a big league starter, right? So I think that the logic there is that he has a full offseason, he can ramp up, he can really kind of fine-tune a couple things. Obviously, changeup was excellent, fastball played up incredibly well last year. A lot of room for Shane Smith to really take another step with the breaking balls. I think that's the big key for him this season.
Right.
If he can refine the breaking pitches, there's a world where you're looking at a guy with 3 to 4 plus pitches potentially, because the fastball and changeup were so good last year. Particularly the fastball was like probably better than it should be, frankly.
Right.
It was a great pitch, but the fastball like overperformed last year. So I think you could see some balance where the fastball, if it even maintains or even takes a half step back, if the breaking ball ticks up in a big way for Smith, you could see a guy that, you know, with full season under his belt, with built up innings, like he could really end up being, you know, a pretty huge pitcher. And you know, I don't particularly see Smith as an ace in the future myself, but even if he's your 2 or 3 guy, if that guy shoves this year leading a young rotation, like I don't hate the take. I think it's in play for sure.
Yeah. My sort of viewpoint with this was like what you said, it's kicking that off, is like he has a full off season now to prepare as a starter, as a member of the White Sox organization. He didn't have it coming into last year, and then you go out and look what he did. Like, I think that the new pitching coach, Zach Bove, he was widely regarded in Kansas City as like somebody who knows and understands how to make the body move fluidly and have everything connected. And while I think Shane Smith does do that, him working in tandem with Brian Bannister is, I think, the pitching, like he's like the perfect ball of clay for both of them to mold and sort of just become like their perfect pitcher. I'm not saying that Shane Smith is a perfect pitcher or will be a perfect pitcher, but like in their eyes, I think he is just a stuffed up guy who knows how to move down the mound. I think that we're really going to see him take that next step, especially in this year and going forward.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think that's a great first take. I think it's hot. I wouldn't say it's steaming. I'm actually very curious to see that I don't know. I'm curious to see how hot your 100% can get if that's your least hot take coming in. Because mine are a little less hot. I would say mine are more prediction than take in terms of the heat level. My first one is about Mr. Edgar Caro, because I honestly think Edgar Caro has been getting disrespected this offseason. I think that the viewpoint of him being like this clear secondary catcher just isn't really true. And I love Kyle Teal. I think Kyle Teal is an exceptional player, but these are guys that were ranked, you know, within 10 to 20 spots of each other in top 100 lists for the last 2 years. And Caro, yeah, he didn't show the best version of himself in his rookie season. It's 111 games. He's 22 years old as a major league catcher, and he got called up before Teal actually, and was, you know, the early call up last season. So my prediction is that Edgar Caro will solidify himself as a piece of the core with an OPS of at least 750, 15 plus home runs, and an over 10% walk rate. Little specific, little niche, just an overall stat line for Caro. I think he's just going to be a really good all-around player. I don't think he's going to be exceptional at anything particularly. I do think he's going to get on base a ton. He ran an almost 8% walk rate last year and really wasn't fully in his approach to the same way he was in AAA. 10+% walk rate, I think he's going to hit that. 750 OPS, I think if he's walking a lot, if he's producing a little more juice, I think that's very much in reach. This is a guy who was around 690 last year. I think he ticks up a lot. I think he becomes, you know, a significantly above average offensive catcher in terms of 750. The power is probably the hottest of those takes, because he had 5 homers last year, and I'm calling for 10 more. He plays another 20 games. That already adds a few there potentially. I just think there's a lot more juice in there than we saw last year, and I think he's going to find a way and find some more hip movement. We saw that in 2024. I think he's going to continue to just take another step in his development and really show that he's a piece of this core, even if it is, you know, as a DH half the time.
Yeah, and I think that part of Caro's, like, I don't want to say down year, because for a 22-year-old catcher, he had a great year. Like, yeah, you know, the numbers weren't what you were expecting from a guy who you called up and he was your everyday catcher, or like your primary catcher until Teal got the call. But I think that if Caro can tap into more of those power numbers, he gets on base more than enough to make himself serviceable and, you know, locking down a piece in that core conversation that we've been talking about.
Yeah.
So I love that prediction. Edgar Caro has been one of my most watched prospects since he got traded here, just because that is also a very good hot take that some people might not disagree, some people might not agree with, but
yeah, it's interesting. We got in the comment from Carrie saying, you know, she likes Kiro more than Teal. I don't necessarily put one over the other. I just, my biggest thing with this prediction is that Kiro will prove that he is a piece of this future, even if it is in this tandem catching role. And I think that they're just going to see from both those guys. I almost thought about doing a tandem prediction for the two of them, because I really just honestly think that they will both show the value and truth in having two legitimate catchers and how much that does for the staff. I think that you might even see each of them find a particular pitcher they work really well with and become kind of that guy for that pitcher. Like I just, there's a lot of things that need to continue to go the right direction for both of those guys. But I just believe in both of them, and particularly Kiro, I think, is going to take that step with his overall, you know, metrics at the plate, especially the power. I think we're going to see tick up, and he's going to get even more comfortable with what has always been an excellent plate approach.
Yeah, I want to say he was the youngest catcher in baseball for a period of time before Samuel Basayo got called up. I think he was the youngest catcher.
Definitely the youngest starting catcher for a while.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So that's just another wrinkle to add in. Like he's very young. It's going to take some time for him to develop into what his potential can be. But I've got full confidence that he will post a better offensive season than what he did last year, just because I don't really think that Edgar Kiro is that bad of a player where, you know, fans are writing him off after one bad season where he was a 22-year-old and getting his first taste of the big leagues and didn't really play a lot of AAA baseball. Like that's the other thing. Like he had the majority of his time in the White Sox organization was in Birmingham. Like he didn't get a lot of those reps in Charlotte like you would expect a hitting prospect to do. Like, you know, we've seen Colson Montgomery sort of stall out at Charlotte, so I could see why they wanted to just keep him comfortable down there in Birmingham. But he didn't have a lot of reps above AA before he got the call to the big leagues.
Yeah, no, definitely. I'm with you there. I think he's going to be really impressive. I saw someone comment about this, but before we get into our next thing, I got to mention this. If you want to support Just Baseball and Future Sox, this shirt is sick. This is the City Edition White Sox Just Baseball shirt. Howard just mentioned it in the comments. This is a really cool shirt. I'm going to get one for Dylan sometime because I know he needs one of these. But in general, anybody that wants to rep the White Sox and Just Baseball, this is a pretty cool shirt. I love it. I wear it all the time. It's a cool little, you know, identifier there. Dylan, take us away with your second major league prediction here.
My second major league hot take, so we're increasing from the Shane Smith prediction. The White Sox have multiple months with a 500 record or better. I don't think that's that hot. Really? Because I was looking through the month by month results, and there was only one month where they were even within five games of 500, and that was July. They went 12-13, and then, you know, you look at the rest: a 5-21 April, 11-17 in May, 10-16 in June, 9-19 in August, and then 11-14 in September, where you didn't play the full month. But I think that if the White Sox core can take a step forward, and I think this team will be better than last year. I think that it's just another year of experience for a lot of the young guys. I think the pitching staff, especially the starters, especially in that pitching staff, get more experience, get more comfortable. I think that you can have, let's say you rattle off a 7-8 game win streak. You're looking at, you only have to win 2-3 more games to go 500 for the month. So I think that the White Sox could, I'm not saying that they're going to win 81 games and be 500, but I think having multiple months of being a 500 ball club, I think that that's what they should be shooting for. I don't know if it's going to happen. So that's kind of why I went a little bit more on the hot side.
If you had to call your shot, which 2 months?
Ooh, okay.
This is where it gets fun, because I think then you factor in call-ups, changing in the roster, potential trades, right?
I think I'm going to go June and August.
I was immediately thinking June. I think June will be – I'll piggyback off your take. I think June will be the best month of White Sox baseball this year. Maybe it's – I hope it's August or September, but something in me just – I feel that June call-ups, energy, finding the groove, and just something pops in June. That was the first month I thought of when you said this take initially.
Yeah, I think that, you know, you're sort of like – You're looking at June as, you know, when all the guys who are maybe not like starting the year in the big leagues, but like they have an outside shot at the big leagues, you know, like a Braden Montgomery, Hagen Smith, Noah Schultz. If they have a good first 2 months of the year, June is when, you know, you want them to get to the big leagues and, you know, see what they can prove. So if that happens and, you know, the White Sox are just rolling with all the young guns, June could be very fun.
Yeah, no, I'm with you there. I'm throwing up some things in the comments. So if you're listening on audio, the YouTube's really entertaining me today. So everybody should definitely check that out a little bit. I love that. Mine is going a little bit of a different direction, kind of in that future focused direction at the major league level. This actually might be my hottest take of my major league ones. Okay. I'm going in a different order than you. I'm kind of just going in the order I thought of them. The starting rotation for the Chicago White Sox will feature four rookies at the end of the year.
Ooh,
that is probably my hottest major league take. Ooh, I don't know exactly what that means. I'm not going to say exactly what I think the rotation is going to be. What I think is that outside of Shane Smith, I'm not confident that all of the prospects coming up the system are not better than any other starter in the rotation. That's where I'm at. That's what I would say. I think Tanner McDougal's coming up, Noah Schultz, Hagen Smith. You've got guys coming back from TJ like Mason Adams. You've got guys coming up from the minors, even like a Duncan Davitt. There's plenty of other guys. Riley Gowans could be a guy that gets up later in the year. I just think, and maybe this happens to injury. I would like to think that more than just Shane Smith from the beginning of the year sticks in the rotation, but Davis Martin, still a trade candidate in my eyes. Anthony Kay, if he has a strong season, I think immediately gets flipped at the deadline. Sean Burke is going to have to really prove that he's worthy of locking down a rotation spot, or he may shift into either, you know, following an opener. I think Burke could end up being a guy that follows an opener type of guy instead of being a starter. And then beyond that, like there's still that last start spot that's pretty wide open, unless it might be Sean Newcomb for the meantime. But like, I think there's a real world this rotation is 80% rookies by the end of the year. I think it's very possible, and I would honestly be so here for it.
I could very easily see 60%. I would almost say 60%.
I was going to say 60 at first, and then I decided to make it hotter and go with four instead of three. I think three for sure. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Three is sort of like my expectation for the end of the year.
Yeah. Same.
But 4 out of 5, I would sign me up as long as like nothing horrendous happens and, you know, you trade everybody away and, you know, everybody gets hurt. I think that 3 out of 5 being rookies, and then, you know, maybe a fourth slots in with, you know, maybe like a Christian Opper has like a crazy year and he gets pushed up.
It
could very easily happen.
I think there's a lot of ways it could happen. And I think, again, 3 was my initial take and I bumped it to 4. So 3 is probably what I would like predict. 4 is my hot prediction of like, it's possible. There's a real world that happens. I mean, you're one injury away too of either, you know, like a Shane Smith or a Sean Burke or Davis Martin of being, having that be even likely, you know, like it's definitely possible. I think we get at least 3 by the end of the year. And I'm all for seeing kind of a lot of these rookies just continue to, you know, to really tick up and to see what they have at the end of the season. So that was my second prediction for the major league is 4 rookies by the end of the year in that starting rotation.
I love it. And, you know, we just got a Munetaka Murakami mention in the chat, and that ties in perfectly to my third prediction, which was Colson Montgomery and Munetaka Murakami, the big left-handed power bats, they combine for 75 home runs. 75. So that means one of them has to hit 35, one of them has to hit 30, or sorry, one of them has to hit 40, one of them has to hit 35, however many you want. 75 homers.
Can we tell the folks about our text conversation earlier?
Yeah, we have to.
I was trying to see, I was gauging with Dylan what players he was making predictions for, because we didn't want to double down and make a prediction on the same player. He said there was a Colson and Murakami combo one. Yeah. And I literally texted, is that combined 75 homers?
Yeah.
Nailed it, got it on spot. I knew that's where Dylan's brain was going because we talk about this stuff a lot. And I was actually thinking about the same one. I was probably going to go 65 or 70. I don't think I would have been bold enough to go 75. If you had to take a guess, I'll flip this one on you again. Who has more homers in 2026?
I think Murakami. I think that I don't want to say the whiff issues are overblown, but I think that he has less of an adjustment period than people think. And I think he just like has 1 month where he just goes crazy and hits like 12 or 15 homers and just tears the cover off the baseball for a month. And then, you know, you look up in June or July and he's somehow at like 25 or 30, and then you're like, wait a minute, hold on, how did this happen? So I think that Murakami has more, but it would not shock me if Colson just goes on like a Corey Seager like run where he just leans into the power and just hits nukes for a full season.
I like it. I like it for sure. I think I would go Coulson actually. That Coulson, I do personally think Murakami is going to have more of an adjustment period than some people think. I think there's going to be some working on his swing and figuring things out. I still think he'll hit homers. I think it'll come a little bit later in the spurts of when he hits homers. You'll get some splashes here and there, but I think he's going to really try to probably find his groove more in the second half of the season, which leads to me thinking he's going to be more around the 30 range, which again, a 30 homer rookie season, like sign me up. If he's fully healthy and hits 30 homers, like that's an amazing outcome. Even if it's 25, great. But I don't see why Colson Montgomery can't hit 40 homers this season. I really don't. The more I think about it, the more I look into it. Like the thing is, Colson could take a half step back from what he did last year and hit 40 homers. That's the craziest thing. It's like you could literally have him not hit as well as he did last year. And given how ridiculous the power output was last season, he could still put up 35, 40 homers while taking a step back. So that's where it's interesting. And that's why I think Colson leaning into that three true outcome type of player, which for those who don't know, three, that kind of applies, you know, a player primarily strikes out, walks, and hits homers.
Right.
I think he's going to continue to lean into that mold, and it's going to lead to a lot of home runs and a lot of absolute nukes like we saw from last year. And I'm here for it. And I think that 75 is probably higher than I would go, but I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility.
Yeah, I think Colson was at like a 46 point something home runs per 162, like over a full 162, he would have hit 45 plus. I don't know when exactly in the season I pulled that stat. It probably was like during his week or during his stretch of games where he hit like four homers in four straight games, and it just went crazy from there. But I mean, he was still on a 40 plus home run pace last year, and yeah, if he takes a half step back, you're still looking at 35 home runs from a second year shortstop who looked completely lost in AAA just a year before. So I am all for Colson and Munetaka Murakami just hitting moonshots all over right field.
Yeah, I'm with it. The next guy up for me, if you've listened to the show, you've known this has been my guy since he came over to the organization 3 years ago. He's just been a guy that I've always believed in the stuff. And we saw it the second half last year, and I think it continues over to this year. Jordan Leisure cements himself as a true back-end arm with an under 3 ERA and 100-plus strikeouts is my third prediction here. That might sound gaudy, but like the dude was gross down the stretch last year, and he still doesn't have that third pitch. I think Leisure comes in to camp this year. He finds some variation of the splitter changeup he's been messing around with the past few years to at least be a change of pace against left-handers particularly. And he takes another step forward, and maybe it's not necessarily closing because I think Grant Taylor's awesome too. But if it's a setup or closing, I think Leisure secures himself and locks down. And I know people got frustrated with him last year, and I saw so much negativity around Leisure the majority of last season. Right. I really think that he solidifies himself as a true back end guy who is going to strike out the world. He struck out 31.5% of batters last year, and he was pretty rough in the first few months of the season. 35% strikeout rate, I don't think is out of reach for a guy like Leisure. I think he's going to strike out 100 guys across 70 innings of dominant ball out of the bullpen and prove that he can be an eighth or ninth inning guy going forward for the White Sox.
Yeah, when I look at Leisure and, you know, just his overall season, it doesn't look like as great as it seemed to me when I was like watching games. Every time I saw Jordan Leisure pitch, it felt like he was having like maybe a couple base runners on, but he wouldn't allow anybody to score. But then there would just be that one blow up outing that he would have like every 3 weeks, 4 weeks, and then his stats don't look as great because of him. So I think if he can limit the blow up outings and just become just more refined and just become more trusted in that White Sox bullpen, I think that could be a very real possibility. But my fourth prediction is about another bullpen arm, and this is my last one, so it is going to be the hottest one of them all. It is Rule 5 pick Alexander Alberto becomes the closer by the end of the year.
Woo! Closer. I mean, that's hot. So, a high A pitcher to closing for a big league team would be maybe the greatest jump in Rule 5 history, I think. It would probably have to be.
The way, like, in my mind, I sort of viewed it as, like, this year I feel like Grant Taylor is either going to be Like, I just, he's gonna be a closer, and that's what they want him to be going forward. Or they're gonna let him throw more 2-3 inning outings and sort of like gently nudge him along to being a starter next year. So I kind of saw that as like, all right, maybe he is in the rotation at the end of the year, or maybe he's getting spot starts down the stretch. And I think that if you can get to the end of June and Alberto is still on the roster, he's got the best stuff in the White Sox bullpen. And I really don't even think that it's a stretch to call that, to call it that.
Who the best stuff? He's one pitch, man. It's gross, but I still am taking Leisure or Taylor any day over Alberto right now.
I feel like if he can
lean
into like just blowing 101 mile an hour cutters, just buy everybody, be Emmanuel Clase Jr.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, not with the gambling.
Not that part. Yeah. Somebody also mentioned, Uncle Ted just mentioned in the chat, Prelander Baroa also comes back. Yeah. I was definitely considering a Baroa prediction here because I think that is another guy who could really pop. Like, that's another name who could totally pop. So I almost went with, I didn't end up going with this, but I did consider an overall bullpen prediction, right? I think the White Sox bullpen is like average or better this season. I really do. That's not even one of my predictions, but I think it's very possible. And I think that, I'll put it this way. If Leisure is the closer at the end of the year, you owe me a drink. And if Alberto is, I owe you two because it's a little hotter. So that's a good deal for that one.
I would love to see at the end of the year. I'd be thrilled.
100%. If either of those guys stick, it's a great success from the Rule 5 for two guys with legitimate upside out of the bullpen. That's really good. My last take, and this is, I wouldn't say this is, it's pretty hot, honestly, when you really look at the numbers, I would say. The White Sox offense will finish the season as a top half in baseball on base percentage and walk rate. I think that the White Sox are going to get on base. I really do. I think they're going to get on base. This has been the last 2 years of Ryan Fuller and the entire organizational shift, focusing on plate approach, putting emphasis towards it, putting energy on guys that know how to work at bats, know how to work counts, are going to not strike out quite as much. The tricky part with that is you've got guys, Murakami and Colson are both probably going to strike out 30%+.
Right.
I think the rest of the lineup, and Luis Robert as well, I think other than those three, the other six guys on a daily basis in the lineup are going to do a really good job of working counts, not striking out a ton, getting on base at a high clip. Even those guys that do strike out sometimes, I think are going to walk at good clips. I think you're going to get a lot of walks from Colson, from Murakami, from Kyle Teal, from Edgar Caro. So I think the team is a top half in baseball on base percentage and walk rate, which is definitely bold. It doesn't sound as flashy as some of these, but given that the White Sox, I believe, were 24th or 25th in on-base percentage last year, that's a big jump. That's a big jump. To be a top half in the league team on getting on base, it would be a huge jump for this team, but I do think it's really possible, and I think we talked about a lot of the reasons why this offense can really take a big step forward, and there's reason to believe that this can be a league average offense this year, and then that would be a big step. I know that doesn't sound exciting to everyone, but that would be a huge, huge step. I love this in the chat, by the way. I did have a Brooks Baldwin prediction written down. It was not this, but Jamie in the chat just said hot take for Brooks Baldwin to have 20 homers. One of my other ones I wrote down that I didn't go with was that Brooks Baldwin was going to play 20 plus games at 4 plus positions and hit 15 homers. So similar type of thing.
I'm there.
I think it's the same type of vibe there where he can bounce all over. He can see what happens. Another one mentioned is a couple mentions of Jared Kelenic as well. I would love to see a Jared Kelenic breakout. If you can play with house money and turn a former top prospect into something, like even if it's a platoon bat, that'd be a huge win going forward for the White Sox to have a platoon Kelenic going forward. So that is our MLB predictions. Before we dive into the minor league predictions, we'll take a very quick break here.
This is the new Weight Watchers. It works for members like JoJo, who's learning simple, healthy habits, Sharia, who's making progress with meds, and Kim, who still gets to eat what she loves. For over 60 years, we've helped millions of members find what works for them. Now it's your turn. Watch your life open up. Watch your story shift. Watch what you're capable of. Watch it work. Get started today at WeightWatchers.com.
And we're back. For those listening on YouTube, I'm going to start doing that more often because it makes our audio a lot easier as we start to integrate some more ads into the show. On YouTube, it's just a couple seconds of silence, and then we're getting right back into things here. So diving into the minor league side, you mind if I start this one off, Dylan?
Go ahead.
Simple, straightforward. This is my guy. Everyone knows this is my guy. Mr. Sam Antonacci is going to hit 320 plus in AAA, and he will be a major league starter for the White Sox by June. It's simple. There's nothing more to it. I think Antonacci is going to destroy AAA baseball. I think he's going to come up in June, and whether it's in a platoon, second base, third base, you know, backup a day once a week for short for Colson, probably mostly second base. I think he'll be playing more days than he's not for the rest of the season, starting in June after hitting 320 in Charlotte.
I'm all here for that. Like if he's up in June, that's great. If he's up sooner than that, that's even better. Like Sam Antonacci, I feel like if he won the job, if he won any positional job that's still up for grabs in spring training, with like the exception of like first base, or I mean first base isn't really up for grabs. They signed Murakami, but like if he won like the second base job, or if they need a right fielder, I'm very confident that Sam Antonacci could go out there and throw the glove around in right field. So I absolutely love that prediction, and I think 320 might be a smidge high, but like it would not shock me if he just went out there and just terrorized AAA pitching for 6 weeks before he got the call.
Yeah. And
so you started with one of your guys. I'm going to start with both of our guys. Like, I think that you like him a little bit more than me, just given the fact that you know the family. I said Jaden Fowski becomes a top 100 prospect by August 1st. I put a date by August 1st. I think
top 100 by
August 1st. I think that he has a really big season. I think that if he gets up to single A, if he plays in affiliate ball by like mid May, if you have like 3.5 months of affiliate ball action where you just clearly look like the best player on the field, which I kind of think Jaden Fowski can do that, especially in, I don't want to say like a weak canny team in terms of talent, but like when you look at the upside in a lot of players or for a lot of players in Kannapolis, I kind of don't think that any of them can match the upside that Jaden Fowski has. And I think top 100 at the end of the year maybe would have been a little bit more realistic, but I'm going to say by August 1st.
I would have been like 100% with you if you said by the end of the year. I think August 1st is tough because with high school draft picks in general that aren't first rounders, you have to go nuts in the minors. And I think it's possible, but it's also like, I mean, Caleb, I don't even think Caleb Bonnemer got up to that point, did he? By August 1st? He might have been right around then, right? And he went crazy. So I'm like, I think, you know what? I'm here for it. Go, let's see it. Yeah. I mean, I think it's possible for sure. I think it's definitely possible. I think Fowski's the type of guy who I do see him and Carlson moving together. So if one, I think there's a very good chance both of them go straight to Canada to start the year. And if they go to Arizona, I would expect them to be in Kannapolis fairly soon after. So my thing with Fowski is like, I'm curious how soon the power is going to hit, because I do think he's going to develop into more power. I don't think it's going to be right away. So I'm not sure that you're going to see a still learning how to play the outfield teenager with not a ton of power rise up a list that quickly just because of the profile. With that said, if he taps into some power and he can put out 10 home runs in the first half of the season in Kannapolis, all right. All right. For sure. I think it's definitely possible. So I would love to see it. I think Fowski's a guy who could very easily push into that top 100 range. And it's just going to be about how quickly he gets to Kannapolis and how quickly he hits the ground running there. Because if he doesn't start the season in Kannapolis, August 1st becomes a little tight. Yeah. If he starts the year there, though, I think that's definitely plausible.
100%. And like, let's say he doesn't start the year in Kannapolis. I think that he could be up in like June. Like, I don't think that him not starting the year in Kannapolis, it probably puts like a little bit of a hold on like the August 1st thing. But if he spends the majority of his year in Kannapolis and does what we both think that he can do, I think that by end of year, he probably will be a top 100 prospect. So maybe August 1st was a little bit too quick, but yeah.
I think it's great. Another funny comment here. I think it isn't going to be interesting to see how the roster shakes out. I'm going to be very curious to see what happens with Lenin Sosa and Corey Lee as well. Both guys that just don't fit on the roster.
Right.
Something we mentioned in last week's episode. And I think we'll definitely have the opportunity. Yeah, we've talked about it plenty, right? That's very true. Okay. My second on the minor league side of things, I think that Blake Larson is going to return from Tommy John and become this year's Christian Upper. I don't think it will be necessarily the same trajectory as Opera because he's not going to be back likely pitching in games till May or June. But I think the second half of 2026 will feature a massive Blake Larson, like breakout couple months there. I think he's going to have that type of thing where you look at him, like we saw when Christian Opera debuted in Kannapolis last year. You look at him, you watch a couple starts of the stuff, and you say, wow, this guy can pitch. Yeah. And I think it's just going to be one of those like, ooh, look at this guy. And yeah. It might not happen immediately because he's coming off TJ. It's not quite the same situation as Opera was just working through his pitch arsenal. He's working on his mechanics. Larson is coming off of Tommy John, and he's a teenager still. So I wouldn't put quite that level of expectation on him in terms of the pacing. But I think by the second half of next season, this season, I guess we're in 26, yeah. You're going to see Blake Larson take a huge step and show that he can be, you know, a cornerstone pitching prospect for the next wave of talent.
Yeah, I just like the White Sox odds of developing left-handed high school or JUCO pitchers. I mean, the last two that were selected before Larson were Christian Opper yeah. and Noah Schultz. Like, I feel yeah. like if trends continue, Blake Larson could be another one that is cut from the same cloth of those just stuffed up lefties with, yeah, they've got control risks or control issues and reliever risk, and they might never stay healthy, according to some people. But, you know, when Blake Larson was healthy in high school, it's just ridiculous stuff. It was like a two-seam sinking fastball up to like 97, 98, and then one of the best breaking balls you'll ever see from a high school pitcher. It was disgusting. So I think that if he can come back showing the same stuff, I'm here for that all day.
Yeah, I think there's a real chance. It's funky. It's fun. The stuff moves really well. I see a guy who can just show in the second half of the year that he really has the stuff to be a legit pitcher. It might take time. It might not be till 2027. I could be a year early for sure. Just considering he hasn't pitched professionally at all, and he's a teenager and he's coming off TJ. Like, I might definitely be a year early on this, but I'm willing to be a year early on a guy whose upside I really believe in.
Right. And then my second prediction is going in the same vein of a left-handed pitcher stuffed up. Christian Opper ends the year as the top pitcher in the White Sox system. And I think that even if one of Noah Schultz, Hagen Smith, or Tanner McDougal doesn't graduate, I would still take Opper over them. I think we're going to see, I don't want to say the same season that Tanner McDougal just had out of Christian Opper, but if he had even 80% of what Tanner McDougal just did, I think that he could end the season as like a pretty consensus top five prospect in the White Sox system, if not higher.
The crazy thing is he just had an 80% of Tanner McDougal, basically, right? Like, maybe not quite, but like, maybe not quite, but he was gross this year, dude. And it was in, maybe it wasn't was. A double, I guess, but like, it yeah. was nasty this year. Maybe it was 70% of McDougal, but like, he already showed that type of upside. Now it's just going to be about putting it together, getting some more innings under his belt, doing that, it in double yeah. A, especially. Like, that's going to be that jump. I think that my assumption is that McDougal and probably Schultz, both at least those two graduate yeah. by then, in which case I'm all for it. Like,
right.
there's a chance I have Opper not too far off the top five right now. Nonetheless, you know, the more we had him at eight, I think, right? Yeah. Seven or eight. I think we had him yeah. seven. And so, yeah. like, he's in that range, but I'm all for being the top pitching prospect in the system. I think that's in range for him. And I think that if he takes another step from what he did last year and he just keeps progressing, the makeup, the stuff, the arsenal, the left-hand firepower, the youth is on his side compared to somebody like he's super young still. There's room for Opper to become, you know, a top 100 guy in baseball and a legit high-end pitching prospect. I was thinking, you know, I thought when you said Opper, I was kind of thinking you were going to go top 100, but like, I like top pitching prospect in the system. I think that's, it probably will be that. It's possible. It'd be both yeah. in that case, right?
Yeah.
Likely.
Exactly. So I think that like the thing that I'm looking for Opper this year is just continuing to show the same stuff that he did last year, just over an extended period of time. Like last season, he was on an innings limit towards the end of the year. And so was Tanner McDougal, but he didn't have like the reins put on him until after Opper was. So I think that if you can just let Opper run free and just deal for 3.5 months until the second half starts, and you know he just does exactly what Tanner McDougal did this year, I think that he's amazing.
Yeah, I'm all for that. This is one of my favorite comments so far. Is hot take Albertus exists. I would love for Alexander Albertus to exist. That would be great. That'd be fun. My last player focused one, and then I've got an overall team one coming up next. It's Aldrin Batista. I'm hitting on some of my favorite guys for sure here. I know it's probably being a bit predictable maybe for those who have listened to me enough now at this point and are getting sick of me talking about these guys. But my prediction is that Aldrin Batista becomes a clear top eight prospect in the system by the end of the season, finishing the year in double A with an ERA under 3. I think he's going to bounce back. I think he's going to be healthy. He wasn't healthy last year. He came back at the end of the year, but still really wasn't in his groove. He's going to ramp up this offseason. He's going to come into the season. I think he's going to shove in high A, get to double A, finish the year under a 3 ERA and become, you know, that, I don't, not top guy, because I think Opera will remain above him, but a top, you know, three pitcher in this system by the end of the season.
I love that. If he can come back healthy and continue to show the same stuff that he did pre-injury, I am all here for that, because when he was on, Aldrin Batista was one of the best arms to watch in the White Sox system. It was nutty. And like the stuff that he had pre-injury, I hope it comes back. But even if it backs up like just a tick, I think that it's still the caliber of stuff that is going to just carve up high hitters, just because it's stuff that's moving to an extent that they haven't seen before. So I think that if that happens and the stuff just takes a tiny step back, I think he'll still be fine. But double A is going to be a real challenge for him, just because that's the big jump for the majority of prospects, is that high A to double A jump. So if he can put up an under 3 ERA over the full season, I would love that.
Yeah, and this is, yes, this answer a question. This is the guy that came over from the Dodgers for international signing money a couple years back. I with him, it's like my biggest question is if he can find a north-south pitch. I think he's one step away there, right? It's a really, really deep sinker. It's an aggressive slider. It's a kind of a sharp changeup, but still pretty heavy on the, you know, arm side movement, right? If he can get a pitch that's a little bit more north-south, maybe he mixes in some sort of either a splitter or potentially even a curveball, I think could play really well off his kind of dagger, kind of cuttery slider almost. I'm very curious to see how Batista rounds out his arsenal, or if there's any things that just get adjusted with him, because I do think the East-West is incredible. Like the ability at the lower levels, the ability that he has to manipulate the ball East and West is up there with anybody. So he's going to dominate the lower levels. But like you said there, him succeeding at the upper levels is going to have to do with his ability to kind of further mix and match, work the top of the zone a little bit more, potentially develop another pitch that can kind of be a bit more of a downer, or a little bit, maybe he starts working more of a true four seam. He gets a little more vert on that. Like there's options and ways to play with his arsenal, but I'm really curious to see how they maximize his stuff. First step is coming back healthy, looking like he's at his best. And then from there, you can do more to work on kind of just what everything could look like for him. But I really think, I believe in this guy. I believed in him at the end of 2024. I think he was like 10 or 11 in the system for me at the end of last year, just because of how much I saw there and room to still get better. This year, a pretty much a lost year, but I think if he comes into 2026, just healthy, ramped up, looking like his best, I think he gets to double A, and I think he cooks in double A, honestly.
I love, do you have a innings prediction for that or no?
I think I'd like get over 100. I think that's realistic. I think he can get to 100. I think he can get to 100. Yeah. I think if he gets even above 90, you feel pretty good about it. But I think if he can get to 100, and if it's 100 of under 3 ERA ball, I'm easily top 8, and my prediction hits in that regard.
Yeah. My team specific one, we each did, or sort of like one system wide one, is the White Sox have a top 3 system at year's end, with the upcoming draft likely picking Rock Chalowski, and then you have another second round pick coming, and then who knows what they do. Could they go out and trade for a competitive balance pick? I think that the White Sox already have, like, you could make a case for them having like a top 7 to 10 ish farm right now. And I think that with the additions in the draft, yeah, you're going to lose some guys to graduation. You know, Braden Montgomery likely will graduate this year. Noah Schultz, maybe Hagen Smith, probably Tanner McDougal. Like you're going to lose some of those top 10 guys. But I think that the organization has done a great job recently of filling in the holes in the system depth where, you know, guys graduate and move off the list. I think the organization is going to do a great job this year, and you're adding probably the number one prospect in the system, even over Caleb Bonimer in Rock Chalowski.
Yeah, I love the take. I think it's possible. I do think that could depend on the graduations, because you look at the top 10 right now, and Tanner, Hagen, Noah, Braden, Antonacci, and then Mason Adams, even, who checked in at 10 for us.
Yeah.
That top 10, if you graduate all 6 of those guys, which could happen, even with Rock, it's hard for me to see. I mean, Rock, Opper, Bonimer, Fauske, Carlson, like that's a really fun group. But beyond that, I'm not sure I see quite the depth to be in that top 5. If 2 of those initial 6 I mentioned, though, don't graduate, I completely see that take becoming a reality, right? If one of the starting pitchers in Hagen and Noah and Tanner don't graduate, maybe if Braden somehow doesn't get up till August and is just barely still eligible, maybe that's doable for sure. I think I might go more top five than top three. Top three is tough. It's just hard when you look at some other systems, right? I look and I compare it, you know, looking at like the Mets are going to graduate a lot of people, but their system is deep right now. The Brewers system is going to remain top two or three. Like that system is crazy. And most of them are super young still right now. So I think that system's still going to be elite. Mariners, I don't think going to graduate. The Mariners could end up graduating Colt and Cade, and they could graduate a decent amount of guys. The Dodgers are going to still be really built up with DePaula and Hope and Quintero and a lot of those guys. So I like it. I like the take. I think I probably would lean more like that 5 to 7 range, just given the graduations that are incoming. Then again, when you add Rock Chalowski potentially or Grady Emerson or whoever it may be, like you're going to add a top 30 prospect in baseball with the first overall pick. So that definitely helps. Assuming you get a big step forward from Bonomer, Fauske, Carlson, then you've got a, you know, potentially three elite high school recent draft picks in addition to a first overall pick. And you got to feel pretty elite and pretty great about that top core at least.
Yeah. Cause like the sort of like, I kind of like tied things together with this overall system. One was like, I think Rock is a top 25 prospect in the game. And then I think that Caleb Bonomer takes another step forward this year and becomes another top 25 prospect, maybe even higher. Yeah. So like if you can have two top 15 to 25 prospects and then have, you know, Carlson, Fauske, Opper filling in like the 50 to 100 range, that's pretty good.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. My last one is a team-focused one. Your last one is a player one, I believe, right? So we've got one more each, and then we'll try and hit some from the chat as well. Very simple last one for me. The Birmingham Barons are three-peating. The Birmingham Barons are three-peating.
Love it.
I think Birmingham's roster at the end of next year could be filthy, dude. Birmingham will have a little bit weaker of an overall roster starting the year than they have in the last two seasons. So they're going to have to kind of either make the playoffs in the second half or just, you know, figure out how to make the playoffs in the first half with a less, you know, filled out roster. But like end of the season, you could easily have Bonomer, you know, you could have Opper, you could have Kyle Odese, you could have a lot of guys filling out that system who are really strong. I think Birmingham has a chance to three-peat, and that would be so cool to see because they, you know, 2 years in a row with Birmingham Barons winning the Southern League, I think they got a real shot. I think Birmingham's been doing something special the last couple of years. There's been great energy down there at the AA level for the White Sox organization, and there's going to be some really good prospects that start the year. And Aldrin Batista is another one I mentioned, right? I think there's going to be some really good prospects that start the year in, you know, Winston and or Kannapolis that end up in Birmingham by the end of the season, and they make another playoff run, and they pull off a three-peat. It would be pretty awesome. Nonetheless, I know it's the minors, and, you know, championships aren't valued the same way, and they you know, obviously development is the priority, but a team three-peating in the organization would just be great, especially for the amount we cover and follow the farm system. I would just love to see that happen for the organization.
Yeah, that would be sick. And the thing that I'm looking for in Birmingham is just how stacked their pitching staff is, because I was looking at the roster resource page on Fangraphs a couple days ago. Their bullpen could be nuts. Like Carson Jacobs, Phil Fox, Nick Altermat is like another guy who didn't get a lot of praise this year, but he's an older guy. But when he was on the field, he shoved. And if you can have those three guys as your 7-8-9 combo in any order, that is a very good back end of the bullpen. That I think that it depends on like their starting rotation, just because I would imagine guys like Gowans and Murphy get the bump to
triple. Yeah, that's the tricky part.
If you can fill in those holes with serviceable arms, I think that is a very real possibility. 100%.
Yeah. Yeah, and Bonomer, Lodice, I think, will be up. There'll be a number of other hitters. I think you're going to get some Samuel Zavala up there. You'd hope that some of the recent draft picks, whether it be, you know, Nick McLean, TJ McCants, any of those guys would kind of break out and get to double A by the end of the season, maybe. Haral Perez should be there for the majority of the season, if not the whole season. Probably at his age, he probably will be there the whole season, right?
Yeah.
So like you said, I think it comes down more to the pitching side, but with Opper getting up there, with Batista later in the year, maybe, with, you know, with guys like Lucas Gordon maybe staying there, you could see Grant Umberger get up to double A. You could see, you know, Luis Reyes, if things go really well, maybe he gets up at the end of the year to double A. Like, there's a lot of interesting. Thais Lukumbe, I think, could get up to double A. It could get fun. I think they have a real shot to do a three-peat there in Birmingham.
100%. And then my last one, it is probably the hottest take of any that we've said so far. Eduardo Herrera, international signing. He comes stateside in the ACL. He breaks out and becomes a system top 15 prospect.
Okay. Eduardo Herrera breakout season.
Eduardo Herrera. Because when you look at his DSL or his Dominican Summer League stats, like, yeah, he repeated and he was an 18-year-old in the Dominican. But you look at his stats, it was batted 235, 379, 397. But the thing that I'm looking at right here is a 17.2% walk rate and a strikeout rate of 23.6%. Both of those numbers have improved since the 2024 season when he was 17 years old and posted a WRC plus of under 70. So he's a big dude, and I don't think that the slugging numbers that he's posted so far, I mean, it was a 397 slug with only five homers across 48 games. I think that if he can just tap into just more of just his size, I want to say he's above 200 pounds. Yeah, he's 6'3", 212 pounds. That is a big dude. And if you can just use some of that natural size to just muscle balls out and just lean into being a power hitter, I think that he could have a very big year. For maybe he has like the I don't want to, I kind of can't really figure out a prospect to compare him to where like they didn't have the greatest Dominican career, but then they came stateside and broke out for the White Sox, because the White Sox don't have any like high-end prospects who don't do well in the Dominican but then break out once they come over. But I kind of like Eduardo Herrera. There's a reason why that was my last take.
Yeah, that's a hot one for sure. This is a guy who's not top 30. He's definitely struggled since being signed for a lot of money, but I liked him during the signing. I heard, we heard pretty good things about him from some people who are tapped into the Dominican market. And I think it's a guy who just the international market in general. And I think he's a guy who has the upside to take that step. So I'd love to see it. Do you think he gets to like Canapolis and gets all the way up to Canny and rakes?
He could, because he's going to be 19 to start the year.
Yeah.
And maybe he has like a good couple months in Arizona, or like a good first half. And then at the end of the year, he comes up with all the recent draftees where, the Cannonballers have just a completely new roster compared to what it was like a month before the draft. So I think that I don't want to say he should end the season in Canny, but like if he did end the season in Canny, it would not surprise me at all.
Yeah, I'm here for it. I think that'd be really cool. I was waiting to see if we got a couple more things in the chat. We got a question about Matthew Boughton. That was another one that is a fun one. I did an interview with him after the draft. You can check out in our feed here. But heard really good things from the organization on that guy. And I think he probably spends a lot of the season in Arizona just because he's a really interesting prospect and just someone who's probably going to take a little bit of time. But definitely could reach Canapolis, and you'd like to see him there by the end of the season this year. So another name to keep an eye on. Any other final thoughts, Dylan? I think this was fun. This gives us an idea. Yeah. I think that, we'll see. We'll review these maybe back in later in the season and just see, see if we can how right we were on some of these. It'd be fun to check out if we're able to, if we get these right, that'd be great. Even if we get a couple of these right, that would be super fun. So we'll look back at these.
I'm thrilled. Yeah.
I'm setting my bar higher. Mine are a little less bold than yours. I want at least two or three of these for sure. So I definitely want a couple of these, but I think that we're excited to see where everything goes. We're going to have a lot of stuff coming up. We're going to do each, league by league previews for each affiliate team. As we get closer to the season, we're going to work on a lot of other, interviews coming up soon. Hopefully get some front office guys. We're also going to be at Sox Fest for everybody that's coming out to Sox Fest. We can confirm that we're going to be at Sox Fest this year, doing some content there, talking to some guys. You can definitely, come say what's up to us. If you're going to be at Sox Fest for season ticket holders, people that are locked into the White Sox, we will be at Sox Fest at the end of the month here, January, I want to say 30th and 31st. So make sure to come by if you're going to be there and say what's up to us. So we've got a lot of cool stuff coming up. We're really excited about this year. I think with Just Baseball now being in our, working with them and me being involved there and everybody else, Dylan's been crushing it. James and Ian, we got Adrian White, who's been killing it on the writing side. He came on the pod last week. Jeff Cohen will be back on the pod soon. And he's going to be doing plenty of stuff down in the Carolinas this year. Really awesome having Jeff at three of the affiliates in person. So we are gearing up for a big year. This is going to be the best year yet at Future Sox. We can't wait. So everybody that is getting ready for the White Sox, take a step forward. We're going to take a step forward too with the White Sox. So we can't wait to bring you guys all the best content. As always, reach out to us if you have anything you want to see on the show, any questions you have. You can reach Dylan at NotCease on X. I'm at ElijahEV8. If you ever have any bigger thoughts about Future Sox, futuresox@gmail.com. You're always welcome to send us ideas for shows, just questions you may have, anything related to the White Sox, honestly, fire away. And we'll talk to you guys next week on the Roundup.
Comfort is often the first thing we're willing to give up, like taking a long flight for a vacation or waking up early for a workout. But don't let style be the reason you aren't comfy. Mack Weldon's Ace Collection makes it effortless to look put together while feeling truly comfortable. Inspired by their best-selling sweatpants, the Ace Collection combines everyday comfort with long-lasting and confident looks. Upgrade your collection for the new year with new bomber jackets, half zips, sweats, crew necks, and much more. Get comfortable anywhere with Mack Weldon's Ace Collection. Go to MackWeldon.com and get 20% off your first order of $125 or more with promo code MACK25. That's MACKWELDON.com. Promo code MACK25.
There's nothing like being in the stands cheering on your favorite team. GameTime is your hack to unlocking amazing tickets in just a few taps. Plus, their GameTime guarantee means you can trust you'll get 100% authentic tickets at the best price. Fees are always included, so what you see is what you pay. Get the best deals on sports tickets. Download the GameTime app and create an account to start searching for tickets to upcoming games and events. Swipe, tap, ticket, go. GameTime.